when one is in great pain. So if one is foolish enough not to take precautions, not to take care of one's health, one is not being sensible. One does not have sapaya sampatanya. One has to know what is suitable. One should not go too far in any direction. Not eat too much, not eat too little. If you starve yourself, it doesn't help in the development of sati to go on a fast. You're so preoccupied with fasting about getting, either having very little food or eating only this, only that, you can cause an awful lot of trouble. You might be a rigid vegetarian, so you go somewhere where there are no vegetables to eat. And then what do? Go without food for 2 days, 3 days? Or have to travel to the other side of town just to get a meal? One has to know what is suitable, what is the middle way. Clothes, food, climate, place you live, all the conditions that go towards our life being not luxurious, but not the opposite, just podi. Kojara. This means to know the kojara means field. To know what can be the object of sati. If we try to be aware of ourselves, we will never reach the day when we are aware of anything, because there is no self to be aware of. We try to be aware of tape recorders, blackboards, the weather, the chalk, Thailand, our worries, our problems. There will never be awareness, because these are not realities. So to know kojara sampatanya, we have to know about nama and rupa, what is real. What can be the object of sati? Can sati arise now, or is there too much noise? Wrong understanding if you think there's too much noise, because noise is part of the field of satipatthana, because noise is sound. Sound is real. Hearing noise, hearing is real. So is there any time of the day or night when there is not a field for sati? Is there any place in the world where there is not a field for sati? Do you have to go to the forest? Is the city not the field for sati? Do you have to close the door of your room? If you open your door, is there no field for sati anymore? No. Everything that is real. When you go to close the door, there is hardness, there is seeing. It's real. You can be aware. When you are in the city, there is heat, there is cold, there is thinking. There is maybe a lot of disturbance, but disturbance, being disturbed is just dosa mula citta. You don't like it. It's real. It can be the object of awareness. Fourth, asamoha sampatanya. It means knowing the object clearly. Knowing seeing as seeing. Color as color. In the beginning, we don't know the object clearly. We're struggling to tell if it's nama or rupa. In the beginning of developing satipatthana, we may be able to tell a little bit of the difference between ear-door and eye-door. And then little by little, we may get some idea that, yes, nama and rupa are different. But we're never quite sure at which moment it's nama and which moment it's rupa. We may be sitting here and we may have a moment of awareness that of something, but we don't know what, because we haven't yet developed asamoha sampatanya. We're not clear about the object. Is it really nama or is it rupa? We just know that maybe there is some awareness in the very beginning. These are the conditions for more awareness. Know what is right for you, not too much, not too little. Don't torture yourself, don't overindulge. Knowing the value of developing satipatthana, what for? Knowing what you can be aware of, so that you don't think that you can only be aware at home, or you can only be aware when it's quiet and peaceful. This is wrong understanding, and it will prevent the development of sati. In fact, if we think that we have to go to a meditation center to develop sati, the chances are that we will never be able to develop sati. Unless we slowly learn that that is not true, that in fact sati can arise anywhere. When we think we have to go to the meditation center first, it is like the attempt to control. It means we have domanasa now, we don't want to be aware now, and we have apicca for the meditation center because we think we will have lots and lots of sati. So it's Dhammanasa and Apicca again. These conditions for sati are not self. Sampachanya means banya. So these four sampachanyas are four types of right understanding, and the condition for more sati is to have right understanding. If you don't have right understanding, you won't know about the field of sati. You will not believe it when people tell you that you can be aware anywhere if you have strong wrong understanding or very, very strong doubt. If you have just desire for sati but no understanding, then you pack up your bags and go to the forest, sit down for 3 or 4 weeks, and maybe feel very peaceful and quiet, and maybe come away thinking that you do have a lot of sati. But in reality, it may not be sati at all. It may not even be true peace. It may be just pleasant feeling and attachment to the sound of the birds, and you like the nature and quiet water in the stream. That is not kusala, that is liking. That is unskillful. It brings unhappiness in the end. So without right understanding, we cannot even begin. And right understanding is not self. If we have not accumulated some right understanding from the past, in past lives, we won't be able to understand now as much as we want to. The only reason we're talking about banya now, about all of this, is because we have enough accumulated banya from the past to know that we are not wasting our time now. Just think of the other things we could be doing. We could be making money, we could be eating, we could be watching a movie, we could be doing many things right now, but we're listening to this. And we must think there's some value in it, unless it's just out of politeness that we sit. So we have accumulated some understanding of what is useful in life. We have accumulated banya from the past lives. Also, the fact that we are able to hear Dhamma is a result of good deeds too. It is kusala vipaka to hear the Dhamma. So even if there is a cat sitting here and he can hear the Dhamma, it's kusala vipaka for the cat, but it has not accumulated enough banya in this life as a cat to understand the meaning. Maybe in a later life, but in the life as a cat, it's not possible. So all conditions, we are sitting here by conditions. We hear, we see by conditions. We understand by conditions. We misunderstand by conditions. We have doubts by conditions. And what is the result of all of this? Perhaps you might think that if you develop sati, you better be careful because you might become an arahata before you're ready for it. You might think you might become an arahata tomorrow morning and nobody will want to talk to you anymore, and you won't want to go and see the movies, and life will be miserable. You might think that it'll take the spice out of life if you start to develop sati. You might think you'll become very sad and not laugh and not smile. But it's impossible. When there are conditions to be happy and to smile and to laugh, you won't be able to stop it. If somebody gives you tasty food, you cannot sit there and persuade yourself that it is tasteless, terrible food, because it tastes good. Our accumulations of liking, of lopa, will make us like it. So we don't have to worry about suddenly not having any kwamsuk anymore or any nice feelings. And the most interesting part of all is that what it is that we like most about our lives, although we don't realize it, is really the feeling. It's not the attachment that we care about so much. It's the fact that attachment brings us such a good feeling so often. And sati can arise with good feeling too. Sati can arise with good feeling or neutral feeling. Attachment can arise with good feeling or neutral feeling. Now how about we just take all the attachment out of our life and put back in all sati in its place, still have the same feeling. So the thing we value most in life, the feeling, we're not going to lose anyway. We will go on having pleasant feeling. We can see that realities are not self, and we can see the dangers of lopa, dosa and moha, and at the same time have a good feeling. In fact, the big difference between getting rid of attachment and developing wisdom is that we get rid of all bad feelings.
End of discussion. Damodaro at Wat Plang, the 20th of November, 2518.
I said anybody can learn a little bit, but anybody can, a little bit, if the conditions are right. And we cannot say when the conditions are right for other people or even for ourselves. We cannot be sure. For example, we may have doubt now. Do we know that we are going to have doubt at this moment? Do we know in advance I am about to have doubt? We may guess. If somebody's talking about a certain type of subject that we usually have doubts about, we may guess that if we listen to it, we'll probably have doubt. But we never know exactly at what moment, what reality will arise. As regards awareness, the development of awareness, we can never know at what moment there will be awareness, if there is going to be awareness, or wisdom, or any kind of reality, hate or attachment. Whatever it might be, even seeing and hearing, we cannot say at exactly what moment we will hear and exactly what moment we will see, or what we will see or hear in advance. We can guess and we can be right sometimes, too. We can be right because we can remember certain sequences from the past, but we can never know at exactly which moment what will arise. So we cannot know how much wisdom a fool can develop when, I mean, there was, who's got it? Let's have the Psalms of the Brethren, is that what it is? There's the story of a woman called Bhattacharya, and she went temporarily insane. We only know now that it was temporary because of what followed. But she went insane for what we might call fairly good reasons, because she lost her husband and her two young children, and her mother and father and brother, all on the same day through different causes. And when she finally heard the news, first of all, she found her husband dead. Secondly, she lost one child, then another. And then when she heard the news that her father, mother, and brother had died too, she was alone in the world, and it just broke her. Now, she isn't what we would normally think of as a fool or an idiot, because she was normally in her state of mind was quite normal. But after this incident, she cracked up. She used to go around in circles, and she didn't wear any clothes. Didn't wear any, or? Her name meant something about a cloak, didn't it? She used to drag a cloak around with her or something? Hanging off of her, an old cloak, and she just went round and round in circles. Until one day, she happened to be going around in circles where the Buddha was. And she heard him speak. He addressed her and said some words to her. And there were sufficient conditions, because of wisdom that she had developed in the past, for her to come to her senses, to realize she was naked. And she attempted to cover herself. She was given a cloth. And she, I don't know, was it at that stage that she reached Sotabhanna? She reached the first stage of enlightenment, entered the order as a Bhikṣuni, and later became an Arahatta, fully enlightened, because she had accumulated sufficient wisdom over many, many past lives for simply hearing those words of the Buddha to be the necessary condition for highly developed wisdom to arise. Now, if somebody had seen that woman and not known any of her past history at all, or even known some of her past history, probably no one would, but a Buddha who could know conditions could predict such an apparent complete reversal. They might have thought indeed that this woman was born crazy, you know, if they didn't know her background. And who would if she was wandering around from city to city? Just a funny, they used to call her, what did they say, go little lady, go little mad woman. And we could make the same mistake. So nobody can say what conditions are necessary to bring about what result, how fast, how much. So I would say that what we refer to as a fool, and we don't call a person a fool for nothing. I mean, it's not as if it has no meaning at all. But still, a person that we call a fool can still learn something, but we don't know how much, and we don't know when. Many so-called very intelligent people can't learn anything. Well, they can, but they go through their whole lives without learning anything, because conditions are not right. Maybe in future lives it may be possible. But we've seen people born and live and die in this world without learning anything. Because they haven't heard for a start. And if you don't hear, it's not possible to really develop understanding of the truth. It's not the sort of thing you can nut out all by yourself. No. Never mind the language, what about the realities? What is the difference between the characteristic of knowing and the characteristic of understanding, if they are indeed different? Could you say by knowing that you can speak many languages and you are a well-read person and you know a lot about history, say, politics and mathematics perhaps, or other branches of so-called knowledge? Would this be knowledge? To remember how to do something, or to remember who was king of such and such a country in a certain time, is one thing. But to have some understanding of the true nature of what of one's life, of the realities that constitute one's life. But knowledge with a level of understanding too, not knowledge without any level of understanding. If so, it's just knowledge and it will not lead to the development of understanding. So it is possible to have what we call kusala citta, which is to be kind to people and beings, different beings, to be compassionate, have moments of compassion, to show this, say, in abstaining from killing and being cruel, in abstaining from taking things that don't belong to you, etc. It's possible to be a very generous person too, for all these types of kusala citta to arise. For there to be no understanding of any of this. And there are also kusala cittas that can arise with understanding at different levels. Sometimes understanding just at the level of thinking. Still not understanding, still not penetrating the characteristics of reality themselves, but understanding in theory, through thinking, the significance of what one... Well, it depends what level, what one is doing, what one is saying. I don't know what words to use here, but to understand anyway at the level of thinking. And then when one hears more about reality and the development of wisdom, to understand again on a higher level, but still only thinking. And then beyond that, to get to the point whereby, through being aware of the characteristics of reality that appear in one's daily life, to develop an understanding that is direct experience, not just thinking. So like all types of realities in life, there are levels and degrees. There are degrees of attachment, degrees of non-attachment, degrees of wisdom, degrees of ignorance. So doubt is exclusion from the cure of knowledge. When you have doubt, although it is possible to be cured of all agusala at that moment, there is no way at moments of doubt. Doubt is kind of crippling, the opposite of curing. Doubt can leave you feeling pretty washed out and confused. It's the opposite of curing. When there are conditions for lots of doubt, doubt about seeing, doubt about visible object, doubt about all different types of nama and rupa, doubt about awareness, doubt about doubt, doubt about all different realities in life, doubt about the path, the practice. Tiring a little, fatiguing, painful. Very tiring to have doubt arising all the time. Quite distressing in a way. A condition for lots of dosa. I think in a broad sense, I'd like to say a lack of confidence, a lack of faith, like, say, coming along to study and to listen to Dhamma and having books at home to look at, but sort of not... The doubt manifests itself, perhaps to yourself and others, in a lack of confidence, in a... an uncertain grasp of things, a a shaky understanding of what you're doing and where it's going and what causes bring what effects and whether this is really the right way or not. Maybe always keeping an ear open for these other ways that one hears about from time to time. Uncertainty of grass. Somebody else, you might be able to see it in somebody else quite clearly, that they have an uncertain grasp of the teachings. But it's, like when you're learning a new skill, there comes a time when it clicks. Riding a bicycle, for example, or a horse, or, and that's when you start to get a more certain grasp of things. Prior to that, you have an uncertain grasp of the horse's back or whatever it is that you're trying to learn. You're a bit awkward, you're clumsy. There's something wrong, and it can be seen, it can be noticed that the practice is not an easy one, that there's something tense about it. So this would be a manifestation of doubt. It would show that there was doubt arising quite often if one's practice had this characteristic of uncertain grasp, or I would like to say tension. We talked about this last night. Doubt about the meaning of life, doubt about Dhamma, doubt about Vipaka, causes and results, doubt about the path, nama and rupa, doubt as to whether there was ever anybody who found out any truth about anything, doubt as to whether anybody is able to practice and achieve anything, all those sorts of things. I don't know how many different types there can be, but that general area. Sometimes it's very, very clear, extremely clear. One might think that one can have strong doubt when all of a sudden up it pops all by itself, as usual. And there mightn't even be anybody saying anything about anything often if people come up with funny ideas or new ideas or very clever little arguments, it can be a condition for doubt, understandably. But sometimes doubt can just pop up out of the blue. Yes, not for no reason. It seems like for no reason. It seems like out of the blue, but there have to be conditions for it to be possible. The prime condition is one's accumulated doubt more than anything else. But all the other conditions that might relate to it coming up at precisely that moment, it's not important to know whether or not people could know or not. It doesn't matter. Just to be aware of the characteristic and to realize that it is only a conditioned reality, a type of nama. Dosa. Dosa. Isn't it? Different moments. Not understanding is moha, isn't it? Primarily. But dosa, when you're displeased by not understanding, when you don't like not understanding, when you see that there are just conditions for fog and you want to have, and it's not coming. It's conditioned by one's desire and impatience for results, one's wrong understanding too, to some degree. And at that moment, it's dosa. That's the characteristic of dosa, savagery. Dislike. There's so many different moments. I say wrong understanding because what are we expecting to happen? I wonder. When we feel this frustration. I don't think it's just attachment for results. I don't think we really know very much about what understanding and detachment means. The conditions that you are looking for, perhaps what you're looking for is what we call reasons, trying to think out a conceivable pattern, sequence of events that makes sense to you in the light of what you know about yourself, instead of seeing that it is different types of nama and rupa, which are not stories. But we like to think about it, don't we? We think, why am I so irritable today? What happened, this, that, the other, and I wonder. It's just dosa. It's nothing new. Dosa has to arise when we still have vast accumulations of it, waiting for an opportunity to arise, perform its function. It doesn't matter what the object is. I think we're much more interested in the object than we are in knowing the reality. For example, the object of dosa can very easily be some story, can't it? Some idea we have, right? And we want to know about that story. We want to go on with it and have more story. We're not interested in knowing the dosa, which is thinking about the story. It's just dosa that thinks, and it doesn't matter what the object is at all. Whether the object is real or not real, even. It's just dosa. It is to be considered a danger to attainment. Do you think so? No, it's a very real danger to attainment. It's a block. And if you make a big thing out of doubt, there may be conditions for you not to want to study anymore or listen very much anymore. You might prefer just to give it all away for a while. And that could condition more attachment and more dosa, to the point where you don't want to take it up again. I think it's a real danger. There has to be awareness of it, along with all other realities. With awareness of realities, there can be understanding, and understanding, I think, is the cure for doubt, just as doubt is the exclusion from the cure of knowledge. Doubt is eliminated at the first stage of enlightenment. By what? Banya, which is developed to that level. By wisdom, by knowing, by understanding. No more doubt ever again after that. When you understand that nama is not rupa, not only in theory, but through direct experience, so that there cannot be any doubt of it at that moment, because it is a direct experience. And when understanding grows and there is less and less, more and more understanding of different characteristics, so there must be less and less doubt about different characteristics, until finally, when there is direct experience of arising and falling away, there will come the stage when the arising and falling away of an individual characteristic will be known by direct experience, at least this is what it says. And this obviously must eliminate doubt about the permanence or otherwise of realities, because the impermanence of them has just been not thought about, but seen directly. And then that confirms the words that you've been reading all along, that realities are impermanent. So then how can you have doubt about the Dhamma? And you know that there have to be conditions for this book to appear in the world. You know that somebody must have experienced this for himself, for these words to come about. So how can there be doubt anymore about what it means to be a Buddha, and whether in fact there is somebody who finds out about this truth? So doubt about Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, doubt about the path, doubt about nama, rupa, can never arise anymore, because understanding of all those things that there was uncertainty about has been developed to the point where there has been penetration, direct experience of all that the Buddha said there was to see. From then on, it's plain sailing. We don't know how long it'll take, how many lives even, from Sotabana onwards. But the path will just be the path it was that got you to that point. It can't be a different path from the moment of Sotabana onwards. The path begins with right understanding. It is developed by being aware of characteristics so that there can be more right understanding. And having reached the stage of Sotabana, it will go on, carrying on, just being aware of whatever realities appear when there are conditions for awareness to arise, but no more doubt, no more danger to attainment. Attainment has been attained. No more wavering. Also, of course, no more wrong understanding, as well as no more doubt. I thought that we've read it many times, probably, all of us, those characteristics of doubt. But I was reading it today when I was recording the chapter for Santipalo, and I thought it was a good time to bring it up again, because perhaps our memory of what we talked about last night about doubt would still be fairly fresh in our mind. Often we read about doubt at a time when we're not in the slightest bit interested in doubt, or haven't been talking about it, and so we don't pay much attention to it. But if we bring up these bits of Dhamma at a time when the subject is in our mind, it's very helpful.
See, what I was saying before was that perhaps it's a bit clearer now when we talked about memory, that if there's awareness, if there is any doubt, it must, for example, I can't doubt the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. I've never heard about the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. There's no conditions for me to doubt whether it's a truth or not. There must be hearing about it first, there must be knowing about it.
Yes.
And it's the same when we say there's doubt about the awareness of nama and rupa. There must be the experiencing of nama, there must
there
be
is.
Awareness.
There is.
Yes, but what I was missing out on was that I didn't know about that.
But there is no you, it's just awareness.
That's what I said before in the beginning, is that it's a self. It's important.
That's the whole point. One of the reasons why we can't even understand half this stuff in theory is that we're always trying to fit me in, and there's no room. We have all the information that we need here, and in what we hear from Kunsichin, for example. We listen to it over and over and over again, and we can never quite fit things together because we're always trying to make room for self. But it's all complete as it is. Self that we want to fit in is just an idea we get from remembering and mixing up all those different doorways. But they all take care of themselves whether we have the idea of there being a self or not.
Just the self is very consistent. There's always the same. It always just seems to be the same characteristics of self. Always there. You get asleep, you wake up, and it's always the same you, the same way.
I think what you mean is citta, jetasika, and rupa are consistent. There's always citta, there's always jetasika, and there's always rupa.
Yeah. Well, when we have memory cannot
can you, excuse me, may I interrupt?
Sure.
Would you expect to wake up and find yourself... No. Would you expect to wake up and find yourself as Evan? Or would you expect conditions to carry on producing the rupa, the citta, and the jetasika that have been accumulated and that we call you? Your gamma conditions, your actions in the past condition this particular kind of rupa and not suddenly anybody else's rupa, because their gamma produces their rupa. And your seeing and your hearing are conditioned by gamma. So there are no conditions for you to see what anyone else sees, because their Dhamma produces their vipaka. And when you don't like what you see, whereas other people are perfectly happy with it, it's because of your accumulations that you don't like it. And you haven't got other people's accumulations, so you can't not dislike it. So you have to wake up and be familiar with what you find. There has to be some consistency. But the consistency is not self. The continuity is not self. The nama, the rupa are not self. None of them lasts. But you keep having wrong memory. We all do. When I say you, I don't mean you. I mean we, one. We have wrong memory. Consistently we have wrong memory. We keep remembering self, me,
We keep remembering that things last when they don't. As clear in what way?
Well, seeing to me seems clear. It doesn't seem to be... it's always there, it's always no doubt about it.
And it lasts?
And it lasts.
I thought so. That's the very first question I should have asked. That's not seeing. That's seeing and attachment and thinking and everything all wrapped up together as usual.
Why doesn't awareness wrap itself up with it as well?
When we have awareness, it does get wrapped up with everything. That's why we can't tell what is awareness and what's not. That's why we're so confused. We have a moment of awareness somewhere in the middle of all sorts of other junk and we don't know what's going on. If we have awareness at all. I don't mean by that there has to be awareness. But in the beginning, you can't expect awareness to be so fully developed with wisdom that you realize immediately that there is awareness and what it's aware of and that it's different from this and that and the other.
So awareness is experienced, there is awareness arising, but it's just all mixed up with
it. It depends, there need not be, there can be.
It can be.
There are very few conditions for sati, but there are heaps of conditions for seeing because of all our deeds in the past. You don't develop seeing. You don't accumulate seeing. Seeing is the result of all the deeds that we've performed in the past. The experience of the visible object. But the way in which the visible object is then known after it has been seen, that is as to whether it is known with attachment, or known with aversion, or known with awareness, depends on many things, but primarily our accumulations of these qualities. And we have all, without any effort, accumulated so much attachment, for example, that usually what happens is attachment arises. Awareness doesn't arise because it hasn't been cultivated. The conditions for its cultivation are understanding, some degree of right understanding. And there haven't been conditions for us to have developed enough right understanding, if any, in many cases, for sati to arise instead of lopa. Lopa has been very well trained. And so it just automatically arises with ignorance. Sometimes it's dosa. One day it will be possible for awareness to do that. Just immediately awareness instead of immediately attachment. We have the illusion of control all our lives, at every moment of it, except at moments of sati, and that helps us to eradicate that illusion.
But how can first time sati arise? Sati we can only...
Go on.
Yes, we need to accumulate sati, to have more and more.
Yes. Yes. One of the things I think that is necessary for there to be more sati is for there to be not so much desire to have it, to train oneself. Sometimes I really don't know how to talk about it because it has to be developed. And the condition for developing it is right understanding concerning it and the conditions for it, for example. And understanding of the objects of which it will be aware. It can be aware. It is right to understand that there must be a training. But that training cannot be like all the training that we've ever known in the past, because all the training that we've ever undergone in the past has been with attachment or with agusava. And the training is not the same sort of training. So our idea of training comes from what we know of the development of attachment. What will you do? What do you want to do? Why do you want to do something? Why do you? And then what? Do you want to be aware very much?
No, I don't think I have a desire, because I don't know where it's.
Don't know what? Where?
Awareness. I don't have a desire to be aware.
Right understanding is the condition for it to arise. How does attachment just arise now? Do you have to do anything to make it arise?
No.
Do you have to do anything to have doubt?
No, this is so well accumulated that it happens so often.
You have had moments of understanding Dhamma in theory, at least, without a doubt, right?
Yes.
Understanding Dhamma in theory. Do you have to do something to have that understanding? Do you get ready for it, prepare for it, intend to have it?
It's not really
known. No, but it's a reality that arises, and it's one that has not been cultivated very much, right? Not like attachment. But it arises by itself, and you can never sort of... You might understand that study is helpful, right? As regards developing understanding at any level, whether it be theoretical understanding or understanding of characteristics, direct experience. And
Tamandero at Wat Plang, December 2518.
Do we also have some right understanding of Nama and Rupa? Do we also have awareness of some characteristics?
Sorry.
Now, if our right understanding is rather weak, it might be that we have misunderstood, in particular, this point that she's making about not knowing or seeing the importance of being aware of nama, say. We might realize that nama and rupa are different in theory, and we might see how important it is to be aware of rupa, and it is. And there might be some weak awareness of rupa. All right? Can you think of any reason why they couldn't?
No.
So, however, it's very dangerous if you don't realize how important it is to be aware of nama as well. And the more you hear about it and talk about it, the more conditions there will be for you to understand in theory and later in practice as well. So, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it myself, but that's one way of interpreting that, simply that we all have wrong view of all five khandhas from time to time. We also have right view at different times, to different degrees, so we can have wrong view of rupa and cling to it, and other moments we can be aware of it. And maybe for many people there is only awareness of different kinds of rupa in the beginning, together with their wrong view of all five khandhas. And then maybe later, through understanding more,
they are able to become aware of different types of nama as well. Does that seem reasonable? I would say that that's the area she's in this paragraph. I wouldn't say exact. I don't know that what I've said is exactly what she means, but what I've said I think is correct, and I think that's the sort of thing she's talking about.
At this stage, my interest is not so much on whether Nina is right or not, or what exactly what's going on. It's just that when reading it, the thought occurred to me. This is what I read into it, but it doesn't matter if that's what's there or not. The point is to clear up this point of right understanding or wrong understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that if one knows the characteristics of rupa, in theory,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps even knows the characteristics of nama, knows the characteristics of rupa and nama, but yet, you know, his mind's bent on knowing rupa. He prefers to know rupa.
Mm-hmm.
So he tends to think more about
all the time?
I wouldn't say all the time, mm-hmm. no.
In other words, he thinks he can control what he will be aware of.
Mm, right.
And that would make it difficult for awareness, wouldn't it?